Welcome to another Triple Your Trading Profits audio. And over the series of the last couple of audios, we've been taking subscribers' calls and then answering them, both Stuart and I, and we're getting some really, really great feedback from different subscribers, still sending in loads of questions. We've only really scratched the surface of all the questions we've received, but we'll definitely do our best to answer as many as we can. So firstly, I'd just like to welcome Stuart onto the call. Are you there, Stu?
Hi, Dave, yes.
Thanks for joining us again.
All right, you're welcome.
We've got another series of some really good questions, some very common questions that I think a lot of people have, you know, when they're first starting out trading, and even if you've been trading for a little while. It's funny the way, you know, everybody seems to have very similar questions. It's almost like you're getting stuck at the same roadblock, and I feel fortunate, both Stuart and I having done quite a lot of coaching with different clients, we have a knack for spotting what those questions are and then getting the answers that you need. And I suppose that's what the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar is all about. And the first one that I just wanted to go over was actually, Stu, we received someone who shot through just a little note here. It's not so much a question, rather just a comment on the couple of audios that we've already done. So I've got here, "Hi David and Stuart, thanks for the opportunity to ask a question. My intention is to trade CFDs because of the leveraging. Your first two sessions have confirmed what I've read and learned about trading so far, and for this I'm extremely grateful. I now know my only problem is getting into the market. I used to trade but listened to wrong people and lost confidence in my system. That was working. Listen to your first two audio sessions has changed my mind so that I'm now getting back into trading. Thanks, guys. It's fantastic to have people like yourselves to help out." So,
it's nice. No question, though.
Yeah, no question. But very nice comment. So if you have any things like that, obviously Stuart and I read all of the different notes that come in. So if you're having, you know, some great feedback or had any breakthroughs from the audio content that we're already putting out there, send it in. We love hearing that sort of stuff. So, but I suppose to move into our actual first question we've got here, we've got, why do you teach instead of trading your own account and using the rest of your time for leisure? So I think I might even jump in on this one, Stu, because having sort of my e-support center sent up, not a day goes by that I don't seem to receive this sort of question. And it's funny, I suppose the first thing that comes to mind is, for me, when I hear this question, I'm not even too sure it's 100% genuine question in someone wanting to improve their trading. I find, you know, a lot of times it's almost like it's a little dig. You know, why are you teaching? Why aren't you trading? And I actually created a video that explains my response to this question in detail on my MetaFormula website, which is meta-formula.com, and what I go into is breaking down my wealth creation strategy. And even though, you know, trading is my one true passion, and that's really how I got started in, you know, the whole wealth creation, but to be really successful you do need to have multiple vehicles of investment. So I believe you need to have trading down, you also need to do business, and you also need to do real estate. And I think they're really important to have those key components. And for me, my business component of my wealth creation strategy is what I do online, helping other traders. Not only that, I love what I do as well. In addition to that, which I've talked about many, many times, and all you have to do is, you know, listen to any of the audio recordings that I've done before or read any of my material, and you'll hear my method of trading. I did used to trade very short-term aggressive trading, but now I've really shifted back to medium to longer-term trend-following systems, and it doesn't require you to stare at the screen all day. So you do need, you know, other ways to occupy your time. Yes, I could probably sit here and, like the gentleman says, or the lady, you know, use the rest of my time for leisure, but I really do have a passion for business and also real estate, and so I spend a lot of my time reinvesting in those things to further grow my personal wealth. So, you know, that's why I do it, and I know, you know, having chatted with Stuart as well, it's a little bit of a labor of love as well. You know, we love trading. And it almost takes your learning to a next level, the next level, when you're able to teach others how to do what you do. It's one thing to, you know, learn. It's another thing to teach. So I get real personal satisfaction out of that. So did you have any points you want to add?
Sure. And yeah, just to, I mean, I echo everything you just said, but another thing also is trading can be so solitary. It can be so lonely. So doing things like this allows you to, you know, I guess, mingle, network, gather with others and others who are like-minded, and then you can help them, and there's a lot of satisfaction in that. But ask anyone who trades full-time and ask them how lonely they get sometimes, and I think that will probably help explain why some people do what they do.
Yeah, perfect. So I suppose moving on to the next question we've got here, why are there so many trading methods out there but so few work? Perhaps what are your thoughts on that, Stu?
I guess it's difficult to understand why that person has formed that opinion about methods, what they talked about, how many methods there are, but so few work. I don't know whether they've done any testing or bought 100 trading different methods and traded them all and found that most lost money. What I think you'll find is a lot of the trading methods or systems available that they probably, a lot of them do work, but the problem again comes back to the individual executing that method. So, you know, the person will be required to follow the plan and follow the entry and exit requirements, but then, you know, they second guess and decide to do their own thing, and the last three trades were losing trades, so you start to lose confidence in the plan, and therefore, oh, look, the last four trades have been, well, last three trades have been losers. Perhaps I'll just try a little bit different this way and this particular trade, and, you know, we start to veer away. So often it comes back to the individual, but probably the biggest problem with that is tailoring or finding a methodology which suits you as a person. And we talk about this a lot, about finding an approach, you know, a methodology, a system, a plan which is right for you. And one of the biggest things with that, notwithstanding the importance of time, but one of the biggest issues is risk. So if you have a method that you, say, purchase or acquire from someone, but it assumes a great deal of risk and it's very active and trading often, that just may not suit you. So even though the methodology may work and you gave it to a robot to implement and the robot would make money, you give it to yourself and you don't feel very comfortable trading your own money with that, yep, it's not going to work. It does work, but it won't work for you. So often I think it comes back to the individual.
Yeah, and the person's hit the nail on the head. There are so many different trading methods out there, you know. And it's funny, though, you can actually find successful traders trading a wide variety of different trading systems. You know, you've got, all you have to do is look at someone, you know, you've got your Warren Buffett's trading fundamental analysis and that works, and you've got momentum traders, and you've seen momentum traders that work, and then you also look at people who use Garn and Fibonacci, and a lot of the times you can find successful traders in that area or that particular trading style, but the sad fact is most, or quite a lot of traders don't end up making money because they don't go through that process, like Stuart said, of making sure it matches their personality and suits them. You're not going to be successful unless you find that trading system.
Absolutely. Yeah, it absolutely has to suit you, no doubt.
So I think that pretty much answers that one. I've got the next one here. it's quite a long question. So let's see. We've got hi, Stuart and David. First of all, thanks for your opportunity. I'm ready to open my first trading account, and you guys seem genuinely offer what I'm missing to complete my trading education. A mentor. Well, I've actually found two in this case. I particularly feel lucky right now. I'm glad I have discovered you at the right time. So, okay, that's good. And then we actually move into the questions here. We've got here are two of the possibly too many questions I have. Even after scanning and selecting stocks, triggering through a professionally back-tested system, I find myself looking at 10, 20, 200-day moving averages and a 14-days RSI before deciding when to enter the trade. Is this a fundamental mistake? That's the first part, so perhaps I'll let you tack that.
Sure, I don't know why this person is asking if that's a fundamental mistake. I wonder if he's thinking that the combination of those moving averages and the RSI is wrong, or I'm not really sure. I mean, we can't just sit here and say, oh, you never use a 10 and a 2200 together because they never work together. You can't say that at all. They may work perfectly fine, and it comes back to how you look at those moving averages and how you use them. I mean, if they're all going up, that says something good, and if the RSI is doing the right thing, then that also says something good about that trading opportunity. So, unfortunately, I'm not quite sure what they're asking about being a fundamental mistake. Maybe can you use moving average and an RSI together, if that's what they're asking, which no problems with that. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
And I suppose another thing to bear in mind, that's such a small component of, you know, an entire trading system. You're really, by the looks of things, just focusing in on your entry. And what makes the system work, and especially when you get into doing some back testing, you can see just tweaking small things on your exits and your money management can have a dramatic effect. So I think just to say, is just the just looking at the entry system, is this a fundamental mistake? It's you can't say unless you're looking at an entire system. And so, yeah, just like Stu said.
Of course, yeah.
This is really a three-part question, so I'll move into the next part. We've got, in your experience, is it possible and beneficial to blindly trust a system and achieve total unemotional approach to trading? I also have to trust the software I use to scan the stocks for back testing and actual trading. I'm a software engineer, and I've seen some really poorly programmed applications floating around. That worries me to some degree. Can you trust a system? What do you think, Sue?
I understand what I think the person's asking, and that is a lot of people, I think, desire that mechanical, unemotional, unattached trading approach. So we have a piece of software, we push a button, and it spits out a very small select list, and we have no emotional attachment to any of those. We don't go through any decision making. We literally just take that list and blindly follow and enter those trades. I'm not particularly, personally, I wouldn't be very comfortable doing that. I understand people desire that because I think it makes it easy for people. You can almost assign responsibility to the software and not yourself for making the decisions. It removes that emotional attachment. It removes the difficulty sometimes people associate with making that initial decision to enter. So there's a lot of, I guess, potential perceived benefits in having that approach. I personally am not terribly comfortable with that. I mean, I'd never buy something without looking at the chart and having a good look at the chart. I understand why people want that approach, as I just mentioned, you know, aforementioned, but I personally am not a big fan of doing that.
It's funny you say that. I suppose for me personally, I've always been a big fan of system trading. And yes, you do look at the charts, but I really like the idea of defining, you know, your entries and your exits. Like we talk about, or you talk about, especially Stu, when you talk about developing your trading plan. And I think when we talk about you know, trusting a software program and blindly doing it, to a certain extent, I think if you've done the appropriate, taking the appropriate steps when designing your trading system, and you have defined your entries and exits and almost making them unemotional in that you've already done the research and predefined exactly what you're going to do at any circumstance in the market. When I talk about system trading, I'm talking about that's the system that you're... I don't like the word using blindly trust, because you've done that back testing and you've done the research to make sure that you build it. But once you have built that system, to a certain extent, you then need that that disciplined approach to follow the trading. So I think if you consider the entire system as, you know, that entire trading plan that you've created, then to a certain extent I'd like to say blindly follow it, but you still do need to keep an eye on it, because once you've done the back testing and you know historically, okay, this trading system had 10 or 12 losses in a row, if your system then starts trading outside of those, you know, historical variables, that's at that point you want to step in. So you can't completely blindly follow it, because once you know, okay, I've back tested the system, and really the back testing gives you that confidence to to trade the system, and but if it starts trading outside of those variables that you've been backtesting and it's exhibiting, you know, a new set of results, then that's when I think you really do need to step in. So for me, can you blindly trust the system? I wouldn't say blindly trust it, but you should definitely create that system so you can almost become emotional and step out and start trading.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. I guess I see what you're coming from there. I mean, I do, in a sense, do trust the software to do all the scanning and do all the calculations through all that data and spit to me a very small list. But of course, I still have the final say and use my intuition and judgment to look at those charts and dismiss any, or perhaps, you know, pursue further and have a look further at the chart and decide to enter. But I guess, yeah, blindly is, scares me a little bit, and I wouldn't be too keen at all on blindly.
Yeah, yeah.
Just acting upon something.
So I think we're pretty much both thinking from the same school of thought there, I'd say. And then this moves into the final question, final part of this question. It was for Alberto. We've got, I'm currently using Market Analyst for my historical and daily scans. Should I learn MetaStock to go to the next level, or should I just concentrate on trading itself rather than the tools I'm using? Thanks again. I hope to be able to personally meet you at your trading seminar on the 8th of December. Kind regards, Alberto.
So asking about software and reliance on... So what software did he say he was using? I'm sorry?
It was Market Analyst. And he
and he asked about going to MetaStock. Look, I'm not really sure about Market Analyst, so I can't comment on its, you know, and compare it between that and MetaStock, but I do like what he said at the end. Should I perhaps worry about other things, you know, trading rather than the tools? And I think that's probably a good approach to have. Software is a very small component of our success. I know certain pieces of software have advantages over others and perhaps give us a little edge, but it's not the real edge that we really need. There are far more important things with trading, and exit's one of them, and as you said, being disciplined and having the right mindset, far more important than what, you know, the software can do for us.
Yeah, I think usually no matter, you know, obviously I'm a big advocate for MetaStock, and it's not that it's the best charting package out there, but, you know, I think I fell into using that software, became very comfortable with it, realised it had the flexibility that I need, and I've kind of stuck with it. But that, with that said, there are so many different charting packages out there that can achieve, you know, the same outcome. I think the biggest thing for me would just be to make sure that you have the ability to define criteria that you want, you know, a certain stock to exhibit before you enter, and be able to define that in the software package, and then have the ability to scan the market or the group of the universe of stocks that you're looking at trading to identify those criteria. If Market Analyst or whatever other software package you're using can do that, then I think, yeah, like Stu said, focusing on trading and these other more important components.
Yeah, I agree. And if I could just add something to that about the scanning, I also, yeah, I mean, I'll disclose, I obviously use MetaStock as well and have for many years, and I do think the ability to scan, you know, to scan through data to present a list of securities, I think, is vital. Having said that, depending on your trading approach, if you are just trading stocks, you know, securities, shares, and you have a market of several thousands, and I think it's very, very important to be able to whittle that down to a very small list using your own predefined criteria. If you're just trading currencies, you're trading some options, you're trading some CFDs, you may only do that on a few underlying securities or indices. Therefore, the need to scan through thousands of things is not there. You really just can look at every single chart you need to, because it may only number 5 or 10 or 15, and you could quickly just visually, you know, eyeball each chart and I guess conduct your scanning by doing that. But I do want to highlight a point you made, and that is being able to predefine your criteria. I know a lot of software that has scanning tools have pre-built in scanning criteria, so you can be a little bit limited to what you scan for, and I think ideally you want to be able to do that and define your own criteria and scan for exactly what you want.
Perfect. Yep. Moving on to the next one here, I've got, does this work with the Forex? Thanks. Now, I'm not 100% sure. I think the person might be saying, does the approach that we'll be teaching at the Triple Your Trading Profit seminar. Is that approach applicable for the Forex? And I suppose the real short and easy answer is, no matter what you're trading, system development and system design is the same. There are some fundamental rules that you need to go through. You need to have an exit, you need to have an entry, and you need to have good money management, and you need to have your psychology right. And there are all these components that we're going to go through that need to be in place no matter what you're trading. So that's the long and the short of that one. The next one here I've got, actually, Stu, I think this one might be best suited to you. When considering a share to buy and sell, how much consideration should we give to the direction of the market / index?
Very good question. Really good. At the moment, it's probably not as much of an issue because generally equity markets are performing very, very well, incredibly well. But it is a very good question because there will be a time when general markets and you know, say general indices do fall and perhaps fall over an extended period of time. I have no idea when that will be, but there will be a time in the future when that does happen again. So you have a situation where, let's say the general market, equities market falls over a period of 18 to 24 months. Even though the general market is falling, there will always be stocks that will be trending up during that period of time. And I found that during 2001, 2002, when the Australian equities market fell, yet there were many companies during that extended period, during that couple of years, that had really, really good, healthy, long-term uptrends. So I guess the question of should you consider the general flow of the market or the index, I'll go with the market first. You don't really have to, because even though the market's falling, there'll be stocks going up, and vice versa. Just because the market's going up doesn't mean every stock is going up as well. Remember, the market, or what we view as the general market index, is just that. It's a general overview of the direction of the big companies within that market. So far as the index is concerned, I guess we could perhaps tweak this question a little bit and talk about industry sector analysis and look at industries, and because a lot of industries have their own index which tracks the performance of those companies within that sector. And I think that's probably more applicable because generally markets in a particular stocks within a particular industry do tend to do similar things. You will have exceptions, but generally if the telecommunications company on your exchange are having a pretty rough time of it, you'll probably find that most are. Even though you have some smaller companies that are performing far better, they often are tarnished with the same brush. So if everyone views telcos right now, oh geez, they're no good at all, you'll get some companies that don't deserve it but will be tarnished with the same brush. So indices, so far as industries are concerned, are probably a little bit more relevant and practical, but the general market, I mean, the general market will fall over extended periods of time, but stocks will continue to go up. The majority won't, but there will be stocks that go up during that time.
There are 2 points I wanted to add in on that. The first one, which I think you mentioned as far as sector analysis, I'm really looking forward to part of the presentation at the Triple Your Trading Profit seminar that Stu will be going over. We've been using sector analysis for quite some time, and there's a special part of the system, of my trading system that I use, which is the relative strength comparison, and which effectively enables you to identify the strongest performing stocks in the strongest performing sectors. And I think it's a really powerful addition to most people's trading systems, depending on obviously what markets they're trading, but I really think it's a fantastic addition, and we will be going over that in more detail at the Triple Your Trading Profits seminar. So that was the first thing I wanted to mention. If you're unable to attend, you definitely want to do some research on the relative strength comparison. That's what we'll be discussing in regards to that. And then the second thing was, I find, to go back to the question talking about when considering to buy or sell a share, do you give much consideration to the market index? I find, obviously, I've got my entries and exits predefined, and I've programmed that into my charting package, and I'll scan the market looking for stocks exhibiting that criteria. So as far as that's concerned, when the market is not performing so well, your system will effectively protect you, because I'm looking for those underlying conditions to be exhibited in whatever I'm trading. And if you know, the market is taking a massive downturn, my being, especially this type of system that I trade, which is sort of your medium to longer term trend following system, I simply don't get as many buy signals. So it's almost like my system protects me from the market when there is a downturn to a certain extent, by just not providing me with, you know, buy and entry signals. You'll find, you know, sure, like Stu said, I definitely get signals, but I'll get less signals in those type of markets. So that my system really protects me that way.
If I may add, that sounds like I was answering that question. That's exactly the same. You almost, without even looking at the market index to determine the overall general flow of the market, the number of securities that appear in your final report from your scan can give you some indication of how the market's performing, because it's exactly what you just said. When the market's performing really well, there'll be lots appear because lots are in well-established medium-term uptrends. And when the market's not performing so well, all of a sudden, the number of potential securities in your report is far less, and it gets down to really small numbers, and you know then that the general market's not going too well.
Yeah, so that's the good thing about a trading system. Once you have designed a trading system that works and you have all of your bases covered, which it's really important that you make sure you get each component of a successful trading system in place. If you have that in place, you know, you're protected. That's what a trading system's for. Just moving on to the next question, I actually skipped ahead and had a little bit of a read for this one. I'm not 100% sure. This one isn't super clear to me. I might add Bosman, if you're listening, if you can just shoot me a personal email through to my email. Actually, just do it via the e-support system. I can look at answering that one for you if you can further clarify what it is that you were asking. So, but I might skip straight on to the next one I've got here. I have a nice trading system, but my system has a flaw in it, and I can't tell as a day trader when the volume of the money is really being put in on the move, but my indicators do not tell me this. Is there an indicator out there that can help me with volume? Thanks for your input. And that was from Eric. So what are your thoughts on that, Stu, as far as, it sounds like he's got a trading system, but his trading system doesn't appear to have a volume component, and he was wanting to know if you had any thoughts or suggestions on indicators that he could use to help with his volume issues.
Well, certainly the obvious one is to have volume. So on the chart or as part of your scanning criteria to consider, you know, changes in volume from one period to the next. And I think you mentioned day trading, so we'll consider very short-term time periods, whether that be 5 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour charts or whatever, and actually displaying and analysing volume with those short time periods and analysing volume from one period to the next. A very commonly used volume indicator is on balance volume, which is really just a running total of volume on up days and volume on down days. So when the replace days with periods. So when you have an up period, when the price moves up during the period, the volume for that period is added to the running total of on balance volume, and it really just confirms that as something is moving higher, the average volume during the up days is significantly higher than the down days, and therefore supporting what we're seeing in the price. And probably more importantly, that if you see the on-balance volume declining, yet the price going up, there's a lot of volume being traded on those down days, which may perhaps provide you some indication of what people are thinking about that price, and maybe the buying won't last for much longer. But I guess the obvious response is to consider volume and consider volume from one period to the next. If I may just add about volume a little bit further, I think the time frame you trade over can or should influence the way you view volume. And what I'm saying by that is if you adopt a more medium to longer term trading approach, so you're looking at medium term trends over maybe several weeks and months, to me the day-to-day volume is not really that important. So just because the day you decide to buy in on this medium term uptrend, that the volume's a little bit low and perhaps it's below the month average, and to me that's really unimportant, because as I said, day by day volume when you're considering a longer time frame, to me, my opinion is not that important. If you are trading very short-term style and perhaps considering things over several days and maybe looking just to enjoy a 3 or 4 day rise, then to me, volume is probably just that little bit more important because the underlying trend may not carry that short-term trend up if the volume's not there. So to me, time can play a part of how you use volume. But a couple there certainly use volume. On balance, volume is another, and there's probably a couple of others as well.
Yeah, I had a quick question on that, Stu. What are your thoughts as to why, I suppose the fundamental analysis of volume most people think of when you think about looking at volume is on up days you want there to be greater volume and on down days you want there to be reduced volume. What are the thoughts behind that as far as, is it, you were saying, you know, psychology or what are your thoughts on why when something's going up you want it to have that increasing volume and when it's going down to have a decreasing volume?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask that because often people will ask about volume and people talk about you want more buyers and sellers and everything. But, of course, for every buyer of a share, there's a seller of that share. So there's always equal numbers of buyers and sellers. That's just the way the market works. So you never really have more buyers and sellers or vice versa. To me, it's the way in which those buyers and sellers are placing their orders. The only reason prices will go up is not by buyers just placing limit orders on the screen and, you know, placing them a few ticks or a few cents below the current price. That's not the way you get prices moving higher. The way you get prices moving higher is people really quite aggressive and saying, look, I really want these shares or stocks. Forget about limit price, let's just pay the market price. Therefore, that erodes into the seller's list, and therefore, as the sellers erode away, the price increases. So to me, it's more the action of the buyers and the sellers that causes the movement up and down, not necessarily the numbers. Mm. I mean, you can have a few cents away from the current market price. You could have 5,000 people queuing up waiting to buy and buy, you know, millions and millions and millions of shares. But so even though we have huge amounts of interest in that price, in that stock, at that particular level, that may not move the price 1 cent.
Mm.
If it's just sitting there being passive and just waiting for the price to come back to them. So to me, it's the action of the buyers and sellers that move the price, not necessarily the numbers. So if we have, an up day and the volume is strong, we've had a lot of people buying. Yes, there's been the sellers there, but there's always buyers and sellers on both sides. But we've had the buyers being really quite aggressive and taking the initiative of initiating the transaction rather than just sitting back and waiting for someone to sell to them.
Yeah. I think that if someone was to go back and listen to what Stuart said in that part there, that's some really valuable insight, especially if you're trying to decide how important or how to best utilize volume in creating your entry part or an exit part of your trading system. So, excellent. I've got here now that the next question is, dear Stuart and David, some people said trend lines are like the roadmap to riches. It also defines entry and exit points. So how exactly do you draw a trend line? And that was from Sweeping.
Great question. I really don't know the best way to draw a trend line. And the reason why I don't use trend lines myself, but I've never seen a fantastic, clear-cut, objective, unambiguous method of drawing a trend line. So, I mean, my biggest concern with trend lines is I think they can be, your application of them and drawing on a chart can be quite subjective, and you really can try to find a line of best fit that really suits what you're thinking about a chart. Let me give you an example of a client I had several years ago, and I tell this story quite often. The story goes that I was doing my normal quarterly review with him, so every quarter I'd go along and see how his trades went over the last 3 months, and we looked at this particular chart back when he entered, and it had fallen in the last month or so, and he was still in it and holding on and all those sorts of things. So what he'd actually done was he showed me the chart, and it's difficult to just talk and describe this and what I actually saw. But he had a chart, and he, if you can just picture his trend line being drawn underneath the lows, underneath the troughs of this chart, and heading up. And sure enough, the chart was going really, really well and heading up, and the trend line was reflecting that by drawing underneath. Now, all of a sudden, the price fell and broke the trend line and started to head down a little bit. Now, rather than him acting upon that and perhaps deciding maybe the trend is broken, he decided that it hasn't fallen really that far. I still like the stock. Therefore, he went back onto the chart and redrew the trend line. So he took the right-hand edge of the trend line and lowered it. Keeping the left-hand side fixed, he lowered the right-hand edge, and all of a sudden the chart was still following the trend line, so to speak. In other words, he had said, no, this chart's still okay, it's still going up, because it was following the trend line. Well, he didn't do that just once, if I may. He didn't do it just once. He did it again, because the chart broke through the trend line again, and sure enough, he lowered it again. So it came to the point where, third time, he didn't lower it. And he said, yeah, I didn't lower it here because it had clearly broken the trend line. I said, well, what happened the last two times? It had, you know, so why did you move it the last two times but not the third time? In other words, it all came back to him, and the trend line, all it was doing was confirming what he thought anyway, as opposed to the other way around. It was his thoughts and opinions on the stock that were controlling what the trend line was doing, and not the other way around, which it should have been. So,
with that, I had a super quick question. With when you said that he redrew the trend line, and you did you see the way it was redrawn? I'm wondering if, when you looked at it, did it still look like, if someone was to say, hey, go draw a trend line on this particular chart, when you looked at it, did it still look like a reasonable trend line, or did it look obvious?
Sure. Yeah, I understand. Well, it was still fixed at the left-hand edge, so that was obviously on a trough, on a low point. It was fixed there, and the stock had since formed a new trough because it had headed down, so he literally just connected those two points.
Yeah.
He connected the original one a few months ago to the latest trough. In other words, you had a couple of troughs in the middle there, which were originally on the trend line, but no longer because they were sitting above it. But one other thing about being subjective, I've also seen, you know, I've seen a lot of people draw trend lines, and often I think, I wonder if they really know what the heavens they're doing when they're drawing this trend line. I have seen people draw trend lines so flat because, to me, deep down, subconsciously, they felt quite bullish about this stock, and they didn't want the price to breach that trend line because that would contradict what they thought. So they drew the trend line so far away from the price had no chance at all of breaking that trend line. I've seen others who have felt bearish about a stock draw their trend line really, really close and really tight, and therefore it wasn't too long before the stock had a good opportunity to break that trend line, therefore confirming their bearish outlook on the stock in the first place. Now, this all comes back to, how do you draw a trend line?
Yeah.
On what points do you fix this line? And to me, as I said, I've never really seen a good description of precisely. So you could give it to 100 people and they'll all draw the same line on the same chart because they've followed these instructions. I've never seen a great description on how to draw trend lines, and because of the subjective nature of them, I just do not like them at all. So there's my long answer to that question about trend lines.
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head, and what designing a trading system is all about is coming up with, you know, a set of rules that you can follow which enable you to reduce or eliminate that level of subjectivity. Because once subjectivity gets involved, then you can get emotion. Or if you're emotionally involved, that will obviously affect your subjectivity, and you can end up heading down a downward spiral. So effectively, you know, you really do need to come up with a clear way to define your entry and exit points. And like Stu said, I'm the same. I don't think I've ever seen a definition of a trend line that makes any sense. I've seen a few people, in fact, I've seen a lot of people give attempts in with Metastock. Obviously, with Metastock, there's a little bit of flexibility with the coding language, and it enables you to, you know, try and come up with a theory and a methodology for designing trend lines, but I've never seen one that I've really been happy with, because it always ends up, you know, being wrong at some point in time. So I'm the same. I've got here that I'll just moving on to the next question. What was your best trade and your worst, and what type of system were you using at the time, and what did you learn from the two types of experiences. Cheers, Baz.
So, best and worst.
Best and worst. Yep. And what did you learn?
Yeah, they would have, well, I don't know if I learned that much. They would have both been early 2000 during the technology craze and, you know, just the ridiculous rise of some of those technology-based companies. You know, a lot who had weak fundamentals and were so far away from making a dollar in profit, but that didn't matter because people really wanted a piece of them. So probably my best and worst trades were both in that period of time. But having said that, my best ever trade really had little to do with me because this particular stock just kept on going higher. I guess the only positive that I applied to it was I kept a hold of it enough for it to go up to its ridiculous heights before I got out. But, I mean, I had nothing to do. It was none of my analysis skills or reading the chart that had anything to do with that. It was really just getting in on something, and it was something just broke out and just kept on going higher. So that was my best trade, and it resulted in something I'll probably never experience ever again so far as the gain.
What
experience
sort of system trade was it that you were trading at the time?
Well, it was nothing. It was back in the days when I was really learning a lot about putting a system together, and it was really just a breakout. It was really just this stock exhibited the previous day a 3 or 4 or 5% break higher. So that was my, I mean, I was using Metastock back then, so you just do a quick scan and it shows you all the ones that have moved more than 4%, which of course is outside its normal trading activity, so it highlights that something is going on. And so I think someone else got in it in the office I was working at, and we both jumped on, and the rest is history. But the worst was probably the same period of time when when the Nasdaq crashed and a lot of those technology companies came crashing to the ground. There was one in particular that I held on to and lost a ridiculous amount of money. And I use this as an example in my workshops now, how to deal with losses. And just quickly on a personal front, for quite a period of time after that, it used to gut me. The loss that I took on that trade and the amount of money it was worth, it physically, almost physically made me sick. And there would be times when I was on my own, and this is months after, that I was reflecting on that and why did I do it and all those sort of things. The positive out of this, and it was a real big positive, it was from that point onwards that I decided to cut losses regardless of how I felt or anything. It was just a real turning point in that sense after losing that amount of money, which wasn't pleasant. It was just from that point onwards that I committed that I'll never take, you know, a huge loss ever, ever again as long as I live sort of thing. So in that sense, it was a real positive experience. I probably would have rather not paid the premium for that experience that I paid, but that was my worst trade in the sense that I just held onto something and it fell a long way because it was up so high to start with. So, right in the same period of time, my best and worst.
It's funny when you look at the charts of different stocks in the internet boom that got caught up in that sort of craze, and you just see the ridiculous speed at which they rocketed it up, and you thought, oh, look how fast it's moving, and then on the flip side, it just dropped just as hard, if not faster, and I always find it funny to look at charts like that, and you can see how people got so hyped up about, you know, the internet was coming, and this is a huge change, and you'll see that with all boom and busts. It's that first wave of excitement that comes that just pushes everything up hugely, like almost ridiculous, and then it'll get smacked back down, and then what'll happen is it'll usually get smacked down too far, and then over time, if it is a good new technology, it will start to build up again. It's the way sort of boom and busts go. Massive boom, massive bust, and then if the technology is good, it'll slowly build up over time. Just like now, if you look at, you know, the internet sort of sector, it's people are getting that confidence back, and there's a lot of money flowing into internet investments and things like that because people are starting to realise, yes, there are real businesses here. We just have to be a little bit smarter this time rather than getting caught up in the hype. So I think with my own personal, you know, best and worst trade, my best trade was a mining stock that I really got into just, this was internet boom days, you know, where you could just about buy anything and it would just go up. It's that whole idea of, you know, all boats float on a rising tide. And this particular the stock. I was very new to the market, and I just sort of was one of the first trades that I put on, and you know, got a few 100% in, you know, the matter of a couple of weeks. And it almost felt like every day it just kept on jumping and jumping and jumping. And I really felt at the time like, you know, I'd discovered the Holy Grail and I was a super trader, because this was like one of the first or second trades that I'd put on, and I was doing so extraordinarily well. So at that particular time, it's funny, my best trade, I didn't actually have a trading system in place, which from a psychological point of view could be a little bit damaging, especially for new traders when they don't have a trading system and they first get started trading. And then if they have a big win, they think, oh, look, I've figured it out, this is easy, and then they may not take the steps beyond that to design a profitable trading system. So fortunately, after that experience, I still went down the process of designing a system. So at the time, for me, it was more, you know, just a little bit of pot luck, I'd say, for my best trading experience. And then as far as for my worst is when I first got started with trading CFDs, and it was quite funny, because I thought, you know, at this point in time, I'd achieved a certain level of success trading unleveraged instruments, and I thought, okay, well, how about we take, you know, what I've learned and, you know, magnify that by introducing the leverage of CFDs. And I started to trade, and it's very easy, you know, I started to get a little bit nervous because I hadn't done appropriate, like I hadn't the money management component of my system. All I'd effectively done is tried to take my trading system that I was trading and then shift it over to CFDs and start trading that, but I didn't alter my money management, which, you know, ended up being devastating, because when I started to lose, the effect of leverage, and leverage can be good when you're winning because you'll make a lot more, but if you start losing, you'll end up losing a lot more. And one of the first trades that I got into when I was trading the CFDs, I started losing heaps and heaps and heaps of money, and I was like, oh, this is massive. And it was funny, because where my stop was set, it was still wide, that I still had more room to lose money, because my stop was set on as though I was trading an unleveraged instrument, but the overall risk on my entire trading float was massive, and it started to fall. And then I remember it vividly, sitting there thinking, oh, you know, I'm losing all of this this cash, but my stop's down here. No, it must stick to my system. So I waited for it to get down to that point where it was like, you know, really, really low before I closed out my closed out the position, and I lost a lot of money. And I think what I learned at that point in time, for one, is you do need to design the trading system, needs to be designed around the market that you're trading. That's the first lesson that I did learn. And the second lesson, which I've kind of instituted now, is if I learn, because I realized this partway into the trade that I hadn't done my money management right, I have now instituted a rule where if I realize that I have made a mistake, I will just get out and then reevaluate. I was almost, to a certain extent, like the question earlier, blindly following my trading system without any real thought, when really I should have been smarter and thought, hang on, I haven't, you know, done this correctly. This is my fault, and I should get out. So it was, I suppose, in both circumstances, in both the best and the worst losing trades, it came down to not having the system right. It's really important, no matter what you're trading, to have the system right and correct, to make sure that everything works and you have a little bit of longevity. So that's the best and the worst of my trades. Alright, moving on here, I've got the last question. I might, since I've had a little bit of a talk, Stu, I'll read this one, and perhaps if you want to attack this last one. I've got, I have a brokerage account with Think or Swim. It has a very nice setup. I now have questions as to what stock scans and systems are out there. I can couple it with my new mindset formed by reading Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas. Basically, I need guidance in creating a system to enter and exit stocks and a system to alert me to those opportunities when they present themselves. Thanks, Ben.
Well, Ben, firstly, well done for reading that book, because I think it's a very good book about the mindset. Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas, and he's got a couple of others.
You've met him, haven't you, Stu?
I met Mark in Perth in Australia a couple of years ago, and just had a bit of a chat to him about a few things, and that was quite good to talk to him. But I think his books about the mind are just fantastic, are some of the best. So well done for reading that. About what system and scanning and all the like, again, it just comes back to so many things, and those factors include, all those self-assessment things like your risk level and how much time you have and the sort of products we're going to trade. And I don't know if you mentioned if he's been trading before or if he's new, because if you're new, you're really limited to, I think, wisely, you should be just sticking to stocks because they're the easiest to trade. I can't tell you so far as this is the sort of style you should trade. You need to conduct that evaluation, that assessment, to work out what is in your best interests. And if time is an issue, then you're going to adopt a more medium to longer term trading style. If time isn't an issue, then you are open to trading a variety of different styles. But that evaluation is important. I guess that's what we'll be talking about at the workshop, at the seminar as well.
Yeah, I think that it's one of those million-dollar questions. If you listen back to, I think, one of the previous audios, Stu answered a similar question in a previous audio. So I'd jump back and make sure you have a little bit of a listen to the other audios. But it's such a huge question. Basically, how do I design a trading system? And I know we're putting on a full-day seminar to try and answer that question. So I think that'll pretty much wrap up the questions that we've got for this session. I know I've still got quite a lot more that I'll try and prepare for Stuart and I to chat about. I think we mentioned at the end of the last audio, just for the sake of making sure people can find out a little bit more about you, Stu, what's the best website for them to check out if they want to find out a little bit more about yourself and some of the content?
Yep, my main website is www.trading-plan.com.
Yep, and I think people could be well advised to jump over there, and if they want to find out a little bit more about myself, you can check out meta-formula.com. That's meta-formula, formula.com. And you can also see on there, if you are using MetaStock, Stuart and I both authored the MetaStock Programming Study Guide, which has been an absolutely fantastic resource for those who are wanting to get the most out of MetaStock. So, and there's some other cool things on the website as well worth checking out. So we might wrap it up there. This has just been another audio for the Triple Your Trading Profits Seminar that we've got coming up December 8th in Melbourne, Australia, 2007. So if you can attend that, we've still got some seats left. I'm not too sure how long they'll last. But if you're unable to make that event, don't worry too much as well, because we're looking to record the event live, and if you stay tuned, no doubt we'll give you some details about the home study course once it's ready. So thanks again for listening, and we'll chat soon.